Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and after being held in legal limbo for 2.5 months in detention centers in Florida, over 36 Haitians have now been released. In the chaos following the earthquake in January, they were whisked onto military planes without the proper immigration processing. And once they landed in Florida without visas, they were detained, awaiting deportation, even though deportations back to Haiti had been suspended. And even though the military brought them here. Advocates for the detainees argued that their detention was legally unjustified and unnecessarily traumatic. Talk about adding insult to injury. Nina Bernstein, the New York Times immigration reporter, has been writing about these Haitian detainees. Her reporting is partially responsible now for their release last week. Nina, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, not all Haitians who were whisked onto planes without the proper immigration papers were detained in this way. Some were given tourist visas. Some more fortunate people were given humanitarian parole, which allows them to work here legally. Was this just the luck of the draw? Any reason why some people wound up in this detention and others did not?
I think to some extent it was almost random who they ended up with. I think in some cases there was a reason initially for letting people who were escorts to, say, a U.S. citizen child or a legal permanent resident child or an injured person come get a visa immediately. But the real issue was after, you could understand they're being detained maybe initially to determine, you know, to make sure of identity, you know, what have you. But the point at which the advocates at Florida Immigration Advocacy Center reached out to me was when they were despairing of getting ICE to do the right thing.
Listeners, Haitian listeners, do you have family members in a similar situation? Give us the call. Did this happen to you? Do you know anyone who this happened to? Are you yourself eligible for temporary protected status but have not applied, perhaps scared off by these kinds of stories? And we'll be doing another segment probably later this week about why so few Haitians have actually applied to convert their illegal status to temporary protected. But give us a call right now. And react to this story. Tell us if you know anybody who's been in this situation. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we continue to cover post-earthquake Haiti and Haitian New York. And so, Nina, your article about these Haitian detainees was published on Wednesday. That same day they were released.
Actually, I sent an email to the press people in Washington on Wednesday morning, and by the end of the day, the story went up online Wednesday evening, and by the end of the day, Thursday, not only the ones that I was aware of, but additional Haitian earthquake survivors who'd been detained were released.
Were they embarrassed? Did they even know what they were doing until they read it in your New York Times article? Or your email?
Well, it depends who you mean by they. The thing that was hard for me to fathom, honestly, is that the letter that FEAC, Cheryl Little is the executive director, and there were two other lawyers very involved in this process. They sent a really compelling letter dated March 19th that I know went to officials in Washington. Highlighting some of the most compelling cases, including this young man, Jackson Ulysses, who I want to say Ulysses, but there's no S on the end, who, you know, he's pulled out of the rubble himself. He has lost family members. He and his brother make their way to the airport for trying to find food. I mean, it was being distributed there, and they, possibly during one of the aftershocks or in some other chaotic situation, they're in effect, they're waved onto a military transport plane, and then he ends up held in jail, and his brother sent further deeper into this detention system to some unknown county jail in northern Florida. He was, you know, so traumatized by the effect of having been trapped in the rubble himself that, as the Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center lawyers wrote, the sounds in the jail caused him to panic, to fear that there was an earthquake happening, and that he wasn't going to be able to get away this time because he couldn't run out.
It's such a horrible story. And you wrote about the fact that those detained weren't granted access to mental health counseling despite instances of what you just described. And maybe this is the part that of your reporting that surprised people the most.
Yes, that was one of the – well, it's an endemic issue. The truth is that the detention system is full of people in need of mental health care who aren't getting it. But in this instance, that was another reason, I think, that the lawyers – at the Advocacy Center were prompted to seek public attention because even the effort to bring them a Creole-speaking psychotherapist, you know, it was a Creole-speaking psychotherapist who had done this kind of work in Haiti, and she, after the earthquake, and she delayed her return to Haiti in order to volunteer to go to this immigration jail in Pompano Beach and work with the survivors. And they couldn't get, the advocates couldn't get the approval. They couldn't get the local ICE people to sign off. And the word came back that all the policy on this group was going to be decided in Washington. As I was starting to say before, this letter that they wrote that was dated March 19th was so compelling that when I read it, a week later, I couldn't believe that people in Washington, I mean senior officials, hadn't realized that this was going to be very embarrassing if they didn't act on it right away. That's the disconnect that's still hard. I think that surprises people is that there just seems to be a disconnect between the default mode of the agency and the policies that we expect from the Obama administration.
It also, if I dare say, shows once again the importance of journalism, because they probably would have sat on this letter, as compelling as it was, and done nothing. But the fact that you brought it to their attention as something you were going to publish and write about in the New York Times has been credited with expediting their release.
Yes, I think it's fair to say that eventually they would have been released. Maybe it would have, but not that quickly. And I do think that part of it involves someone at the White House saying, you know, for God's sake, get this taken care of. We don't want this black eye.
Did anybody even say explicitly what was the point of detaining people while awaiting, you know, for deportation who can't actually be deported?
Yes, and I think it's important to see this as the most extreme case on a larger spectrum. Apparently what happened, I mean, there's this tremendous fear of the floodgates, right? There was this fear that after the earthquake, you would have an onslaught of refugees from Haiti. I even heard that Chrome, a big detention center in Miami, was temporarily emptied out. Detainees were sent elsewhere to make room for what they anticipated would be a large number of boat people trying to arrive. Well, it didn't happen. And I think to some extent this small group, and it may be as many as 65 people rather than the 30 that I focused on, arrived in the days, in these chaotic days immediately after the earthquake. And some of them were told by immigration officials and their relatives, their U.S. citizen relatives were told, oh, you know, a day or two or three, you'll be released. And instead, at some point, another plane arrived with including more people without papers, and somebody said, wait a minute, stop. And they changed the policy. They decided they were going to hold people for 90 days after an order of deportation. I mean, that's the thing to know about these people, too. They had, by the time the advocates discovered them in this Pompano Beach immigration jail, which, by the way, is run for profit by one of the largest private prison companies in America, GEO, formerly known as Wackenhut. That once they were discovered, they had already, almost all of them had already been given issued deportation orders in immigration court. That had happened in February, and they couldn't be deported. So at that point, they were eligible under the normal circumstances, case by case, for something called release under order supervision, and. You know, the idea is, okay, they're checking in. You've got a U.S. citizen who's vouching, relative who's vouching for them. And when deportations resume, you don't have to take them before an immigration judge. You can just put them on a plane. Mm. You know, you can send them back.
So now people are calling for John Morton's resignation. He's the Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. Is that a possibility as a result of this botch?
Well, I think that my reporting on the Haitian refugees, combined with a run of bad news for ICE last week, including a memo that had been written by Morton's choice for the head of detention and removal operations, basically setting quotas, saying, you know, we got to deport more people, you got to use maximum detention, and essentially saying make up the, it takes too. I mean, not saying this explicitly, but the subtext was it takes too long to deport the so-called criminal aliens that we've said are a priority. So, you got to pick up more of the just plain old illegal immigrants without criminal records to get to 400,000 deported this year. That was what really first prompted these calls for resignation, and the chorus grew louder on this with this. A Haitian story, and there was just another one that came out, another report that came out about the local enforcement, what's known as the 287G program, that is full of problems, the sort of Sheriff Arpaio problems.
Nina Bernstein, the New York Times immigration reporter, who did the very important piece of journalism that showed up in last Wednesday's Times and helped lead to the release of over three dozen Haitians who had been held in legal limbo for 2.5 months in detention centers after being whisked to the United States from Haiti on military airplanes after the earthquake. Nita, thank you for coming on and for your work.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Ken Lovett, the Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News, on, among other things, the newest new gubernatorial candidate for this year's election in New York State. Stay with us.